You're listening to the Social Work Me podcast with your hosts, Matt Barnes and Julie Carter.
Welcome to episode 13 of the Social Work Me podcast with your host, Matt Barnes. And on this episode, I thought, given the current climate and the growing number of clinicians that are looking into building and developing their own private practice, that we should maybe take some time to look at the back end of running a practice. And this is really a topic that I don't think gets enough airtime, especially in our educational programs. And I know I can speak for the master's social work program I attended. There was basically no teaching or training on how to run a business or the administrative aspects that go into running a practice. And so I was lucky enough to be able to spend some time chatting with the founder and CEO of Owl Practice, and his name is Andrew Sloss. And we kind of use the Owl platform, which is it's an online practice management tool for anybody that hasn't heard of it. But we use this platform kind of as a template for looking at the different aspects and areas that are crucial for running an efficient and successful practice. So without me coming across and this episode coming across as just a giant sales pitch for Owl, we're going to focus more in general terms about how we can save time and money, how we can be more efficient, how we can save room by making things paperless. We talk about billing, sliding scales, and video conferencing software, which is definitely a really crucial feature that we're trying to navigate, especially with trying to keep up with what's compliant with our colleges and different standards based on where we're living. And now that I've been running a group practice for almost 5 years, I'm happy to share all the mistakes that we've made and the hiccups that we've experienced to hopefully try and help you if you're developing or you're growing your practice to making that a little bit more seamless. But again, full disclosure, I've fully drank the Owl Practice Kool-Aid. But all sales pitches and marketing stuff aside, this is just a great episode with a lot of good knowledge from somebody who's founded a practice management software all through helping his wife to develop her private practice. And so he's got the frontline experience and he's been able to develop a really successful and streamlined program that is just absolutely amazing for any private practice out there. If you want to learn more about us, to keep in touch with us, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, just under Social Work Me. And as always, would love any feedback. Would love to hear from you. And I hope you enjoy the interview with the CEO and founder of Owl Practice, Andrew Sloss.
This podcast is brought to you by Southwest Counseling Services and Julie Carter Counseling Services.
How does that make you feel?
Don't social work me.
Well, first of all, thank you for coming on the show, and I'm excited to talk to you about Owl and about what you guys are working on right now with the video conferencing. But I figure maybe we could start just with learning a bit about you, what you're doing, and some of your background of how you got to where you are now.
Sure. So in my background, I've obviously done a lot of different things related to technology and business. I studied engineering in undergrad, and I also had the opportunity to study business as well. And if I think of a through line for my career, it's been really the intersection of technology and business in trying to solve the real world problems that people face through technology. So that really led me through a series of experiences from companies like eBay, Kijiji, Indigo, Well.ca, a lot of sort of technology-related platform and e-commerce opportunities. And so I've always enjoyed in that space, just trying to always understand how emerging customer needs are being met with technology and what you can do creatively with technology to reinvent how things happen and work together. So that's been a bit of kind of where I've sort of come from. In terms of how I got to OWL, I had had, as I said, a number of experiences in the technology field and was taking, frankly, a bit of a hiatus. And my wife at the time was just starting out in private practice. And so I was coming alongside just trying to help her get things organized, think about the tools she needed to succeed. And while I was going through this, I actually looked for a tool that was a web-based version of all the tools that I had built to bring everything together into an easy-to-use kind of tool for a private practice. And while there were some things that were starting to be developed at that time, back in 2013, 2014, there really wasn't anything that was doing it in a comprehensive and elegant way, and in a way that was mindful of the specific needs of mental health practitioners and the specific privacy and compliance issues that Canadian therapists had. So that was kind of my first awakening to say, oh, there's perhaps something here and a real problem that I could sort of begin to help with, and was coming very much from a place of, you know, my partner needing to have some help in this area. So we had a great customer already in place, and we just started building a tool to see if we could help her and to see where we could go from a business perspective after that.
Wow. That's a really cool story. And I'm sure your wife, like most of us, didn't have a lot of the training or teaching around business and bookkeeping and scheduling even, and how to structure a business and a practice. And so it sounds like an amazing compliment to have you kicking around to kind of help her to develop this.
Well, I would say, like a lot of people in this profession, and I've had the good fortune of speaking literally to hundreds, if not thousands, of therapists across Canada in the last 6 or 7 years. But many of them, you know, have been very highly trained and are very naturally oriented to helping people, being empathic, trying to help them, you know, become better people. Often, though, one of the things that they don't get much, you know, experience with or formal education around is, you know, how to run a small business. And the reality is that anybody who starts out in private practice on their own is running a small business. And so we found that in addition to creating a piece of software that helps with a lot of those aspects of things, you know, we're also able to come alongside in a consultative capacity, just say, hey, you know, here's how you can run a small business effectively. Here's the things you need to think about. Here's how you can be more efficient and frankly, just make the whole process a lot more stress-free and hopefully enjoyable for people as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, even just, I guess maybe we could talk about what you guys developed together and what's now known as OWL Practice.
Say at the beginning, it was really just like, how do we help with all the administrative aspects of running a private practice? So you can think about like some of the primary things being, how do you manage a calendar? How do you manage scheduling of appointments? A big part of it was, how do you manage all the billing and invoicing? In the first days of helping my partner, it was all about, you know, ways that you could link Excel and Word together to create receipts and have some facsimile of a client database. And, you know, as you can imagine, these tools, while they're all great on their own merits, when they are trying to come together to serve a specific purpose for someone like a therapist, they really just weren't working that well together. They tended to have a lot of duplication of information. It was very prone to error entry. If somebody did the wrong thing, it was hard to recover from and hard to even detect that it happened. There's a lot of technology that you're wrestling with. Where do these files sit? Do I have to have a server in my office? And then there's a lot of questions around compliance, like, is what we're doing here actually compliant? You know, in the early days, a lot of people were using Google Calendar to store information for clients. And there's always a question about, you know, should this kind of information be finding its way into companies like Google? Not that there's anything wrong with Google, but it really has an advertising relationship with most of its customers. And is that really appropriate for someone who's trying to have a secure and compliant platform for doing their business as a clinician and mental health practitioner?
That's so true. And I know, just thinking back to our early days of having a practice and, you know, clients missing appointments, and we have, you know, the 24-hour cancellation policy. But one of the things we were doing a lot was texting and emailing clients the day before and just spending so much time making sure everybody knows about their appointments so that we're, you know, able to bring in money to survive. And I think that's initially what made me fall in love with AlloPractice was the feature of just being able to send automatic text and email reminders.
Yeah, you know, I was really surprised. It's actually something quite simple, right? Schedule an appointment, have somebody notified that the appointment's coming up. But this was perhaps the most valuable feature after the core calendaring component itself that people really embraced and really loved. It reduced no-shows. It gave the clinician much less administrative burden. They didn't have to be sending around random emails, wondering if their clients were going to show up. So that it was definitely something that was very impactful in the early days. You know, at the end of the day, people are using our software because they want to save time. They want to do the work of seeing clients face to face, and they want to just get more organized, right? There's a lot of disorganization when there's paper process in place or manual things going on. And the more that you can house all this information, put into one secure centralized repository for your practice and for all your clients, the better off that is, and the more compliant you can be as well.
Yeah. And like you said, with the paper, the amount of paperwork and case notes, and that was something I hadn't really realized how much room that would take up, you know, file after file. And another selling point, I guess, is this option to go paperless with AlloPractice.
Yeah, that's a really big deal. I remember when my partner came to me and said, hey, I think we need another filing cabinet. And I was kind of, my jaw almost hit the floor because I'm like, well, we already have 3 4-foot long, like 4-foot high filing cabinets. Like, what can you possibly need to store or continue storing? And where does this end? Like, we already had a whole entire room essentially devoted to files and paper files. And it was very clear to me that, like, we needed not only to create a tool that could actually house data, but we had to make it so easy and elegant and useful that this was their preferred way of storing clinical information. They could see the advantages of having it available from wherever they were accessing their practice data immediately in real time, even years after they'd seen a client. So a lot of people have successfully sort of migrated that pathway to having fully digitized their practice. It doesn't mean that there's not some before time when they have paper files, and some people take the effort to actually digitize those and upload those to their Owl account, for example. But what it does mean is that they have a strong interest in sort of perpetuating this new digital way of being in private practice, and that that's important and actually a responsible way and a better way of being in private practice.
Mm. Yeah, and that's so true, especially with the bookkeeping end of things too. And I think that was news to me in terms of how much, you know, with a private practice, you're collaborating, working with bookkeepers and accountants, and how clunky that process can be when you're, you know, dropping off a month's worth of receipts or invoices or, you know, billing information from clients. And so I think this platform allows other providers that are essential to the business end to be able to access those, that all that information without even having a transfer of documents in person.
Yeah. And one of the things we like to think about is, like, having access to information, whether it's clinical information or business information, is a really important thing. So we've always been heavy on not only helping you capture and digitize that information, but also helping represent it as useful insight to you as well. So we let you look at the dashboard of how your business is doing. How is it doing this month over last month? We let you download data that you might want to analyze on your own. And we importantly let you capture that data. So you're right. If you're working in an offline or paper-based practice right now, and I'm always surprised at how many people even in 2020 are still doing this and haven't sort of migrated to any kind of digital solution, you're really missing out. You're not able to track and capture this information and make use of it the way that a lot of other clinicians are. And as I said before, it really reduces a lot of headaches knowing that at the end of the day, when you're, you know, processing things through OWL, when you mark attendance on a session, say that they showed up, you send them an invoice or just send them a receipt after they pay, when you actually facilitate an online payment by just entering somebody's credit card once and then automatically charging it after they come in for their session. All these things are huge efficiency gains in terms of how much time you're spending doing all these things, and they just make you actually look more grown up in a sense as a practice as well. You know, if you're giving out paper receipts or handwriting things all the time, that doesn't necessarily need to be happening. And I think the expectations among clients is changing too, right? They expect that you have proper receipts and that you're tracking this information. You can look in their account and see what's been happening. And all that's now possible with a tool like Owl.
That's a great point. And I think it kind of brings me to talking a little bit about this pandemic that we're in and how that might change private practice and the world for therapists. I'm not sure if you have any thoughts on that you could share.
Well, I think we're all trying to figure out what comes next and really spinning around a little bit, just trying to understand what just happened. So I think, you know, first of all, I'd say that we're all kind of in the middle of this, and I can, you know, share some of our recent experience, just seeing kind of how our customers and new customers have been behaving in this time. And maybe I'll conjecture a little bit about some of the direction in the future, but generally speaking, I think, you know, people who have taken the time to get organized have tended to fare well here. Anytime you have any external disruption to your life or business, if you're organized and you have things kind of together, it's easier to go through a storm like that. But if you're not and you haven't invested that time and energy, like having something like being unable to go into your office or schedule appointments remotely, suddenly that isn't just something that would be nice to have. It's something that like you absolutely must have. So what we've seen recently is a lot of people continuing to sign up for the service and a lot of people upgrading to include a lot of the features that really help them interact with their clients more effectively. So in Owl, for example, you can, you know, have the standard version of our product, which helps with all your sort of back office administration and doesn't do much to help you interact with clients. But we also have a whole host of features related to ways that you can streamline and make the experience for your clients easier and better in terms of interacting with them. And these include things like just allowing them to book appointments online and allow you as a therapist to have a lot of flexibility in how you configure and set that up, to doing your entire intake and consent process online digitally, through to things like having secure conversations, right? Things you don't normally want to go through email or some other insecure fashion that you want to, you know, make sure that it's being contained because it contains PHIPAA information or PI information. Those kind of things are really important. And we've seen sort of a surge in demand for that since COVID has happened, because people suddenly need to be able to operate remotely from their home as opposed to going into their office, and just need new and better ways of interacting with their clients.
And I imagine too, the billing functions too, like you mentioned with the credit card processing.
Yeah, that certainly makes things a lot easier. And, you know, in my partner's practice, she has a, you know, a merchant terminal that sits on the desk at reception, and they can accept, you know, debit and credit card payments. But a lot of those payments, like debit card, you can't facilitate that remotely. You have to enter a PIN when you use a debit card to facilitate a transaction. But with credit cards, you are able to do some of this remotely. So being configured to be able to do that without any kind of machine directly being involved, and being able to just facilitate a virtual way of charging cards, becomes really important and frankly essential as you're trying to maintain revenue in a very challenging time for a lot of clinicians, when, you know, maybe clients aren't comfortable with doing online sessions, or they just you know, don't have money or resources to pay for sessions at the moment as well. So all these like efficiency gains and creative ways that you can you know, interact with your clients and help them at this time are really, really helpful.
And I know for us, you know, initially we were really hesitant to get on board with credit and debit because there's it's a minor fee, but I think it's 3% off. And so we hung on hard to cash, check, or e-transfer for payment of sessions. And what we found was, you know, you have a client that comes in once and, you know, says, yeah, as soon as I leave here, I'm going to send you an e-transfer, and you never see or hear from them again. And so we realized that we were losing more money than we would with that 3% charge, and it just became really a no-brainer. And I know a lot of other colleagues that have kind of struggled with this too. You know, you want to trust that your clients are going to pay, but I think that function, the credit card function, is just an absolute no-brainer and something I'd recommend to anybody starting out a practice at this point.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And the important insight here, I think, that you've hit on is that, you know, you're running a business, right? And so you always have to be mindful of not just what might in the short term seem like a more expedient or cheaper solution, but often investing in something that can give you upside, improve your customer experience, or ultimately help you save money, say, you know, with bad debt or people not paying their bills, is a very important trade-off to make. And this is challenging, right? Because, you know, if you take your business and you multiply it by 3%, you're like, wow, that's a lot of money. But it doesn't take long to do some additional math, which says, yeah, how many clients would I have to collect from that I normally wouldn't to make that a really good idea? To say nothing of the fact that it makes your life so much easier. Nobody wants to be doing collections. Nobody wants to be extending credit to their clients. That's generally not something I would advise any practice do. You want to be in the business of seeing clients and helping them make sure that they can get better clinically, but also manage the cost of being in private practice too. You know, I've had conversations with my partner and other clinicians about the very notion of bad debt and how that can be problematic and challenging. But my experience has told me that, you know, if you're lending lots of money to clients by like not requiring that they pay right away, that can evolve into a situation where you have somebody owing you, you know, several hundred dollars, and it almost becomes a clinical issue, because then on top of like helping them with whatever they came in for, suddenly they have potentially a financial issue that could add stress to their life, becomes another obligation or something that they need to deal with. And so I try to say that it's generally in the best interest of people to be collecting on that money and using a system that allows you to do that right from the beginning and very easily.
Yeah. And for some reason, social workers, therapists, I think maybe at least myself and the ones that I know, we struggle with talking about money with clients and with the business end of things. And I wish, you know, in a perfect world, maybe there we would spend a bit more time in our, you know, our programs kind of developing some of those business skills. But I think, like you're saying, like this just, it streamlines that. You get that conversation out of the way at the start, you get their credit card information, and then it's there and you never have to talk about it again. And in essence, it almost makes it the conversation less about talking about billing when you have these online features.
Yeah, I agree with you that it can be an awkward conversation to have. But I try to advise people that it shouldn't be. I mean, really what you're doing is you're helping somebody with some of those central and important issues of their life. And while no one ever wants to see somebody being unable to afford a service or, you know, be in a particularly fragile or challenging state from a mental health perspective, just skirting around the financial issue or not talking about it or being upfront about it can actually, I think, create more problems than it might seem like it's solving.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And like you said, having to go through collections or having to, you know, send people multiple reminders, just it muddies the relationship and it takes away from the clinical aspect. So I think that's so important. You know,
this also like impacts things with like sliding fee schedules, right? Because I know a lot of people, you know, as therapists are very concerned with the context, family situations and, you know, work situations that someone might find themselves in as well. So trying to understand when, say, is a good time to slide your fee scale, how often you do that. You know, some people I've spoken to like never slide their fee scale. Other people try to accommodate. It's very difficult to set up some boundaries. But one of the things that I think is important in that aspect is just to, you know, come up with some set of rules that you sort of adhere to, so that you don't have to sort of reinvent this wheel every time a client may ask you for something like a fee schedule or a sliding fee or a discount for services. I think in general, there's nothing wrong with you as a business being in the business of, you know, creating a livelihood for yourself. But also you want to balance that with being sensitive to where people are at. And I think the more you have sort of pre-established rules and constructs for helping identify people who might be in need and maybe what percentage of your business maybe would kind of lean that way. If you do that up front, I think it just makes it much easier than dealing with it on a sort of ad hoc or one-off basis where it might be just awkward to have that conversation.
Yeah, that's interesting. And do you have, like an example that you could give of how to set those types of rules, or like, is it based off a percentage, would you say, of the business that would be a sliding scale, or how would you, what would you recommend for that?
So I think it's very personal. Every clinician is going to decide if they would like to do this, and if they do, to what degree they want to do it. Some of the most helpful things I think are thinking about, you know, somebody says they need financial assistance, or they don't have money to do this, or they're in bad circumstances. And while that may be true, you know, you have to help determine a set of criteria that are going to let you determine if that person in fact does have financial need. You know, if you have somebody who rolls in with like a brand new car and lives in a huge house, you might be skeptical of their ability to be in, you know, a challenging financial situation, which may or may not be true. You don't know. And so being able to say, okay, the way we determine, you know, somebody being in a place where we would offer financial service, we need to see, for example, proof of income or lack of income or something like that. It may seem harsh, but I think it shows to people that like you really do need to be in a situation where you're deserving of these services at a discounted rate. The other thing that I have seen from therapists is that it tends to be the case, I would say, that like if somebody comes right out and asks for a discount, sometimes that can be an indicator that like maybe they're someone that you want to consider whether you should give a discount to or not. And sometimes your intuition as a therapist will just tell you, given that they're presenting their life story and circumstances, that, wow, this person could really use some help. Maybe they're not asking me, but I actually feel like this would be a situation where I'd like to like just proactively say, hey, what if we gave you like a 20% discount on your services or something to help you out while you look for a job? So there's a lot of, you know, I think intuition and personal consideration that goes into it as well. It's a very personal decision.
No, I think those are good ways of looking at it. And I think that goes for a lot of industries, and having to ask people to show, you know, that they're on social assistance or that they're on ODSP or whatever can seem a little bit intrusive, but I think it's a good practice to get into just to have those boundaries as well with your clients.
Yeah, I think it just gets very muddy if you haven't established some of those criteria. And even if it sounds a bit harsh to be asking some of those things, I think there's a way to do it in a way that preserves dignity for the client and allows you to, you know, continue to be helpful in the best way possible in a clinical set of circumstances.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about video conferencing, because I think this is just, it's essential right now, given what's going on in the world. And I know that Owl Practice is right there with a new software. So can we talk a little bit about that?
Sure, absolutely. So yeah, as we all know, if your practice didn't have a sort of video therapy or teletherapy solution to use in the past, it probably absolutely does now and certainly does need one. We have been working on this actually for quite a while at Owl, and our plan was to release a video feature in June. What we've had to do is just accelerate that, recognizing that our clients need this very quickly. So we put a lot more resource on it and just worked a lot more quickly than we normally would on a feature to bring it to market. So we're currently now testing this with a group of alpha customers, sort of an initial group of customers that are giving us their feedback, making sure that it's working adequately and easy to incorporate into their everyday lives. And we're very excited that it will be coming out in just a matter of a few additional weeks. To our customers. One of the nice things, as everything with our video feature, it's going to be fully compliant from a regulatory and college perspective. So we're going to obviously host it all on the infrastructure that we have in place. And it's also going to be fully integrated into Owl. So, you know, I imagine that a lot of people now, if they have been using a video solution, they might be using something that's not perfect, right? Maybe it's not doing exactly what they need. Maybe it's a U.S. product, not a Canadian product. You know, I think that these are extreme times and people have had to react in some really above and beyond ways to try to just accommodate their businesses, their customers, their clients, and do everything that they possibly can. I think going forward, you know, people are going to have to ask themselves some basic questions just about, you know, what do I really require from a system like this? And what is going to be most helpful to me in my everyday practice? So while we would have very much liked to have a feature ready at the beginning of March, so everybody could just have used the Owl video feature, what we're excited about is the fact that this is going to have the same level of compliance and security that the rest of our product does, so people don't need to worry about that aspect of things. And again, it's going to be fully integrated and very simple and easy to use. I think people are really, really going to like it.
And I know there's been a lot of talk about encryption and HIPAA and HIPAA compliance. For us not in that world, how does that look? How is that tested? Like, how do you know if what your software you're using is up to those standards? Because I know there's been talk with Zoom and some of the other ones that, yes, they are compliant, but then you hear that there's breaches of confidentiality and people joining in on conversations and things like that. What should we be looking for?
So it's a very good question. And I think to really answer this question appropriately, you have to step back and understand at least a couple of things. One is, like, what is the underlying system architecture that the system or solution you're using is built on? And two, what is the character of the company that you're interacting with here? And I will say that there are certainly a whole lot of people making claims about HIPAA compliance, HIPAA compliance, et cetera. We were one of the first and earliest in the mental health field to try to understand what this meant, and then to work collaboratively with each of the professions in the mental health area to actually help define what that meant and what was acceptable and unacceptable from a compliance perspective. So the way we look at this is, one of the easy things people think about is like, okay, where is your data? Is it in Canada? And that's a really good question. And you should absolutely make sure that your data is in Canada. So right at the beginning, whether it's practice management or video, there's a number of players out there that can't meet that requirement. That was certainly the situation I found myself in when I was trying to look for a piece of software for my partner's business back in 2013. There just were not acceptable solutions that were Canadian and, you know, with data stored in Canada. HIPAA compliance refers to an American standard that's not dissimilar from something like PHIPAA that we have here in Ontario. But again, it is very American. And just because something is HIPAA compliant absolutely does not mean it is like PHIPAA compliant in Ontario. So, and one of the biggest differentiators in our mind is, where does that data reside? Now, there are also a lot of other things that we do with our system that we think are essential and central to making something compliant from a college and regulatory perspective. And again, I should say, from a regulatory perspective, we're talking about provincial health regulation here. So it's like PHIPAA in Ontario, but each province has their own unique version of this. And we're very familiar with these regulations and acts and have specifically designed OWL to comply with them. But when you think about the specific underlying architecture of the system, it's not just a matter of like, where is my data sit? But we have made a strategic decision as a company to not use one of the large cloud vendors. And if you peel back the onion a little bit and investigate a bit more deeply, you'll see that if not everyone, the vast majority of people offering PHIPAA or HIPAA compliance services are actually operating on networks that are operated by Amazon and Google. So what does this mean? This basically means that the data, the devices your data is stored on, the hard drives, servers, are actually owned and part of a cloud that a large, often non-Canadian company is maintaining and running. In our specific case, what we do is we actually own all the physical servers and we own all the hard drives that data is physically stored on in our data centers in Toronto. We think this is important, right? We could choose to architect ourselves using an Amazon or Google cloud, but we don't think, in our opinion, that is sufficient. We think this because we want you to know that we can find the physical device where your data is located. When you're operating in a cloud environment, you're often just sharing machines and using something called virtualization, which is, your data could be on one of any number of machines or hard drives spread across the network. And it's often very difficult to tell which one. And even if you do know which one, it may change over time. So there are a lot of issues just around, where is the data? Was it deleted appropriately from one machine in that kind of configuration as it's moving around and as the system grows and changes over time? We felt like it was really important to define ourselves as being the people that knew exactly where your data was, and we could manage it very specifically because of that knowledge and that system design. So we, for example, could take a hard drive out of one of our servers. We know it has client data on it. We can destroy it if the data is expired and we wanted to do that. We have control over that data. And we also know exactly, which servers everything is on as well. So that's just one important aspect of you know, and a consideration that a lot of people don't ask themselves about, but we ask ourselves about that because we want to make sure that we represent ourselves to our clients and customers, that we're giving them the best answer, and frankly, what we think is the only answer that will help them achieve the kind of compliance they need from a regulatory and college compliance perspective.
Wow, that's really interesting. I had no idea that a lot of these softwares are using those, I guess, other clouds to store things. And so I guess just if when we're doing research, looking at and peeling back layers of where is the data being stored is one of the most important things.
Yeah, you can ask like where is the data stored, and who hosts your servers, and what cloud are you using? And if they can't tell you that they're operating on their own servers that they physically own, some people will rent servers, which is fine, but that means that they're using someone else's servers or virtualization of servers in an environment. And we frankly don't think that's accessible or acceptable in terms of, you know, a PHIPAA compliant solution. So that's just why we've made a different decision there. And I think why a lot of our customers really appreciate that, because they do take the time to understand that, and it becomes an important differentiator for them.
Thanks for breaking that down for us. That's really helpful.
Yeah, hopefully it wasn't too much tech jargon for you.
No, I think you did a great job of explaining it. And so it sounds like Owl Practice will have the video conferencing available sometime in May then.
Yes, absolutely. Obviously, as the CEO of this company, I want to get it out as soon as possible. We need to just balance that with making sure that our customers are going to be delighted and happy with it when it launches. A couple of other things about the service. It's already natively built to accommodate the couples and family therapy that a lot of people do. So in Owl, obviously you can connect different client profiles into families effectively. And if you're say doing a multi-person session with say two partners and a couple, or say a number of members of a family who all have individual client profiles, our software will let you have sort of multi-attendee sessions, in the video solution as well. So we're very excited to do that. You can obviously do one-on-one sessions, but we can also accommodate those kind of sessions through our linked account structures as well.
Right on. That's perfect. Well, that's going to be a game changer, and I'm really looking forward to that feature. And just to close out with you, Andrew, is there any tips or wisdom that you can give to new therapists, new social workers that are looking at starting up a private practice, opening a small business? Anything that you can share with us?
Sure. So, I mean, this is very much in the vein with everything we've discussed today, which is that, look, the more organized you can get, the more you can invest upfront in time-saving structures and tools that are going to help you be effective in private practice, the better off you're going to be. You know, do this for yourself as an investment. Do it as an investment in the clients that you're going to get in the future. It may cost you a little bit to get set up, although, like with our software, we do try to make it as accommodating as possible and have the lowest price points in the industry. You know, even like, you know, $40 a month can seem like a lot of money, but it will absolutely allow you to be a better private practice. Your clients will benefit from it. You'll have a much greater practice peace of mind, as we like to call it. You know, a lot of times our therapists are trying to advise their customers to be more present, to be more mindful, and just to be more relaxed about life and how they you know, and mindful of their being in the world. And if you as a therapist are finding that difficult to do because you're not supporting yourself with the tools you need to really do that in running your business, it can be challenging. So yeah, we think that making a bit of an upfront investment is a really good thing. And I should say that, you know, we try to earn everyone's business every month. So even if you just want to try it out and you're not sure it's going to work for you, we have always felt very strongly that if you want to choose whatever kind of relationship or, you know, software you're going to engage with, like you want to make sure that you have a time to try it out, to make sure that it works for you. That's the most important thing. Find something that works for you. Make sure you're choosing a system because it'll improve your ability to run your practice. It'll improve your ability dramatically to comply with the standards that are out there. And you want to make sure you can grow with this company too over time, just because you're establishing a relationship with someone that'll sort of last a long time as you're in private practice. So those are just some of the things that I would think about. Invest in yourself up front, invest in the tools that you need to really make yourself have the best chance of success in private practice.
That's excellent advice. Thank you for sharing that. And thanks for coming on the show. And I guess if anybody wants to get in touch with you or find out more about OWL Practice, what's the best avenue to do that?
So it's best to go to our site, owlpractice.ca, where you can sign up for a demonstration or a free trial. We also have another brand called Therapy OWL, which is a great way. We haven't talked about it, but for people to advertise their services to prospective clients, we're the fastest growing way for Canadians to get introduced to a new therapist, and we're free. So if people want to do that, they can go to therapyowl.ca as well and create a free listing. And we're always happy to talk to you. So if you ever want to reach out to us by email at support@owlpractice.ca, we'd be happy to have a conversation with you.
That's awesome. And you guys have been nice enough to offer any listeners of this show discounted on the first month. And to get access to that, it's just visiting owlpractice.ca/socialworkme.php for anybody out there that wants to dive into OWL. Well, that was great, Andrew, and I really thank you for taking some time. I know it's a hectic time for you guys, and I wish you all the best getting the video conferencing up and running, and I can't wait to start using that.
Well, thank you very much, Matt, for the chance to talk to you and your listeners, and I certainly wish everyone the best success as they're dealing with everything COVID-related, and we'd be happy to help out people if there's any chance for us to do that. So thanks for your time today.
Awesome. Thanks, Andrew. Take care. Don't social work me.